Hey everyone, welcome back to Scars Left Behind, podcast episode 29. DMX dies, medical examiner, and horrors of shooting. Before we get right into it, I hope that everyone is having an amazing weekend, spending time with friends, family. This episode will be going up on Monday, and in case you are not aware, there are three podcast episodes a week: Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. They all go up at differing times. So if there's a specific time that would work better for you, then do please let us know and follow us on Instagram at Scars Left Behind. That's behind without the E. Also, follow us on Facebook at SLB Podcast. Also, depending on where you listen to our podcast, if you are able to and you feel like leaving us a review or like rating, and you have access to iTunes, Apple Podcasts, then you can leave us a review on there. It will help us out, and it will really mean a lot. But other than that, let's get into today's topics. So, as I've said, DMX, the gravel-voiced rapper and actor who topped the charts with tracks including Party Up and X Gonna Give It To Ya, has died aged 50. His family said Friday in a statement, the rapper, whose real name was Earl Simmons, had a heart attack on April 2nd. According to his lawyer, Murray Richman, he was immediately hospitalised in grave condition. Earl was a warrior who fought till the very end. His family said he loved his family with all his heart, and we cherished the times we spent with him. White Plains Hospital confirmed that DMX passed away peacefully with family present after suffering a catastrophic cardiac arrest. DMX broke onto the rap scene in 1998 with his first studio album, It's Dark and Hell Is Hot. That album debuted at number one on the Billboard 200 chart, powered by hits such as Rough Riders Anthem, Get At Me Dog, and Stop Being Greedy. He achieved more success with the albums, and then there was X, Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood, The Great Depression, and Grand Champ, all of which debuted at number one on the Billboard chart. DMX released 7 albums and earned 3 Grammy nominations. He also scored several roles in Hollywood films. He starred alongside rapper Nas in the 1998 crime drama Belly, and 2 years later, he joined Jet Li and singer Aaliyah in the action movie Romeo Must Die. He appeared with Steven Seagal in Exit Wounds 2001 and teamed up with Lee again in Cradle to the Grave 2003. He also made a cameo as himself in the Chris Rock comedy Top 5 2014. DMX was candid about his experience with substance misuse over the years. He also faced various legal troubles, including repeated arrests and brief stints in jail. In an interview last year on the rapper Talib Kweli's People's Party show, DMX said his drug use started at age 14, when his mentor at the time gave him a blunt laced with crack. DMX, who got emotional during the interview, said he had never smoked anything before that night. I wouldn't do that to my worst enemy. In their statement, DMX's family said his music inspired countless fans across the world, and his iconic legacy will live on forever. We appreciate all of the love and support during this incredibly difficult time, they said. Please respect our privacy as we grieve the loss of our brother, father, uncle, and the man the world knew as DMX. And all of my condolences go out to his family. Also, we had someone pass very recently as well, someone who was known in the UK. And you know, I forget her name, but I can do a little bit of background. She used to be a big brother. So my condolences go out to her family as well. But next segment, the medical examiner who ruled George Floyd's death a homicide testified Friday that Floyd's heart disease and drug use contributed to his death, but police officers' restraint of his body and compression of his neck were the primary causes. Dr. Andrew Baker, who has been the chief medical examiner in Hennepin County since 2004, said Floyd had severe underlying heart disease and an enlarged heart that needed more oxygen than normal to function, as well as narrowing of his coronary arteries. Baker did not include a lack of oxygen or asphyxia as a cause of Floyd's death. Baker said that before he conducted the autopsy, he was aware that Floyd had become unconscious while he was in police custody and had died at a hospital. He said he did not look at videos of Floyd's death, including the bystander video that went viral, until after the autopsy was complete, so as not to be biased in his findings. Baker's findings were at odds with those of other prosecuting expert witnesses, who were explicit in their assessment that Floyd died from asphyxia. In this case, I believe the primary mechanism of death is asphyxia or low oxygen, said Dr. Lindsay Thomas, who retired in 2017 from the Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office in Minneapolis. She said she reached that conclusion mostly from a video that showed Floyd struggling to breathe. She trained Baker and that they were friends. Thomas said she agreed with Baker that Floyd died from cardiopulmonary arrest, the seizing of heart and lung function, complicated by the way law enforcement held him down and compressed his neck. The testimony from Thomas, a medical examiner of 37 years, who works part-time as a forensic pathologist in Salt Lake City and Reno, Nevada, as well as that of other experts, Thursday bolstered the prosecutor's arguments that Chauvin killed Floyd by kneeling on him for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. When Thomas and Baker testified, prosecutor Jerry Blackwell provided autopsy photographs of Floyd's body to jurors. The photos were not shown publicly. Chauvin's attorney, Eric Nelson, had said Floyd could have died from a heart condition or the fentanyl and methamphetamine that were found in his system. The testimony from several medical experts this week provided the first opportunity to hear how Nelson would argue that a central point of the defence. He did that in part on Friday by posing hypothetical situations to the two medical examiners. He asked Thomas and Baker how they would have assessed Floyd's cause of death if the only information they had was either that drugs were found in his system or that he had heart disease. Scenarios that would ignore the officer's restraint of Floyd and Sarvin's knee on his neck. Would have assessed Floyd's cause of death if the only information they had was either that drugs were found in his system or that he had heart disease. Mr. Floyd's uses of fentanyl did not cause the subdural or neck restraint, Baker said. His heart disease did not cause the subdural or the neck restraint. Thomas testified that such factors did not directly cause Floyd's death, and that they are commonly included on death certificates for a public health purpose. Under redirect by Prosecutor Blackwell, who asked Baker that what his opinion is as to Floyd's cause of death, Baker affirmed his findings that Floyd's death was a homicide. My opinion remains unchanged, Baker said, as his testimony concluded. It's what I put on a death certificate last June. That's cardiopulmonary arrest, complicating law enforcement, subdural restraint and neck compression. That was my top line then, he added. It would stay my top line now. Blackwell asked him whether he considered the other contributing conditions as direct causes of Floyd's death, and Baker said they are not direct cause of Mr. Floyd's death. That's true, they are contributing causes. In earlier testimony, the other medical experts doubted Floyd's physical condition and his use of illegal drugs played a role in this death. Dr. Martin Tobin, a pulmonologist and critical care doctor in Chicago, also rejected the defense's claims Thursday that Floyd's drug use and underlying health conditions killed him. Tobin said a lack of oxygen resulted in brain damage and caused Floyd's heart to stop. A healthy person subjected to what Mr. Floyd was subjected to would have died, said Tobin, a lung and critical care specialist at the Edward Hines Jr. VA Hospital and Loyola University Medical School in Illinois. Tobin said Floyd's breathing was seriously constricted, while Savan and two other Minneapolis police officers restrained him. He said Savan's knee was on Floyd's neck for more than 90% of the time. And when I first heard of this, and unless anyone can prove to me otherwise, this was clearly race motivated, in my opinion. But if you put your knee on someone's neck, irrespective of their health issue or whether they are taking drugs or not, that's not the point. The point is you restrained him in a manner which is not in the training protocol as an officer, and due to that he passed away. So I don't understand the argument they're trying to make in defence of Salvin. But that's just me. Tobin said Floyd's breathing was seriously constricted, while Savan and two other Minneapolis police officers restrained him. Chauvin is on trial on charges of second and third degree murder and second degree manslaughter. Police were called to Cup Foods, a convenience store, on May 25th after a cashier suspected that Floyd had used a fake $20 bill to buy cigarettes. A bystander video of Floyd, who was black, saying he couldn't breathe as onlookers yelled at Chauvin, who is white, to get him off, was uploaded to Facebook and widely viewed. It sparked international protests. For the first time, a seat designated for a member of Chauvin's family was occupied Friday by a woman. According to a reporter in the courtroom, her identity was not immediately known. Chauvin's wife filed for divorce shortly after Floyd's death. And obviously, at this point, Chauvin's colleagues are still, by his side, But that's the update on that. I'll obviously keep tabs on it. But next, the final segment is Horrors of Shooting. So Yoon-ji Lee had been napping in the break room at Gold Spa while her co-worker Yoon-ja Kang was waiting for a ride when she heard a tick-tick sound. She would later discover it was the sound of a gun. A white man had just shot three of their co-workers in complete silence, both survivors said. He didn't say a word. I think that alone shows how premeditated and bent on a motive he was, Lee exclusively told NBC Asian America. Lee, 41, and Kang, 48, are the two employees who were on staff at the time who survived the shooting at Gold Spa. Three of their colleagues were killed March 16th, along with five others in a string of attacks at three spas in the Atlanta area. Six of the eight victims were women of Asian descent. The four women killed in the Atlanta spas were Hyung Jung Grant, 51, Sunsha Kim, 69, Soon Jung Park, 74, and Young A.U., 63. The remaining victims, who were killed at a spa in Cherokee County, about 25 miles north of the city, were Zhao Tan, 49, Dae Yu Feng, 44, Delena Ashley Yawn, 33, and Paul Andre Mitchell, 55. Robert Aaron Long, 21, of Woodstock, Georgia, has been charged with 8 counts of murder and 1 count of aggravated assault in Cherokee County. Burns Law Group PC, based in Canton, Georgia, which is representing Long, did not respond to a request for comment. The Atlanta Police Department did not provide additional statements on any of the allegations, saying updates on the case would be posted as they become available. Lee, who said she sleeps and eats at the spa, said she had just dozed off when the gunshots began. Kang heard co-worker Park was out of the kitchen and asked, "What's that?" She and Lee heard another colleague, Kim, scream and then fall silent. Kang said she stuck her head out of the break room and saw Park lying flat on the ground in the hallway, before making eye contact with a white man holding a gun. Kang ducked back into the lounge and brought Lee into hiding with her, with Kang taking cover under a blanket while Lee hid behind a large box once used to store charcoal for their now unused sauna. And before I continue, I just want to this has always struck me, and I've always wondered this, but And this has got nothing to do with whether this person who did this had mental health issues or not. Right, I know that there's been that argument plenty of times, but the fact that he had a gun. Now, I know that in America, if trained properly, you can own a gun. But also, you can kind of finagle the system, so to speak, and you can get and you can bypass it. But to me, you need to have a look at your gun laws. Because every time I, look at the news, especially in America, there's always a shooting that's gone off, and for some reason these people seem to get hold of guns, you know, just like that, you know, and it just really beggars belief. But I think there needs to be tougher laws, and I think that you need to be really stringent and more strict on who can own a gun. But that's just my opinion of someone who lives in the UK, because in the UK, over here in the UK, we don't really, our officers don't carry guns. But, you know, again, that's just my opinion. He didn't say a word. I think that alone shows how premeditated and bent on the motive he was. She had urged the police to call the ambulance to escort her colleagues to the hospital. They ignored her pleas for help and only steered her away from the scene, Lee said. The police officer didn't even inform us that our colleagues died. James Nahr, the chair of the Asian Community Advisory Committee of Gwinnett County, appointed by the district attorney, helped organise Lee's GoFundMe page. He said Lee told him she struggles with bouts of insomnia each night, envisioning the footsteps of the suspect as she shut her eyes in hiding. Nahr said he's known Lee's long-time friend for years, and she had reached out to him for help. Kang lives with her husband and daughter, who has recently set up a GoFundMe page for her mum. Kang, who was the only surviving victim at Gold Spa, who witnessed the suspect attempt to shoot her, said she's still haunted by making eye contact with him. The slightest noise startles her, and the sound of honking cars evokes memories of the shooting. Fundraising profits for both victims will go to professional mental health counselling for post-traumatic stress disorder, they said. This is a living hell that nobody should go through. It's hurting so many people. Kang said Grant was her cherished friend for 14 years. Her daughter and Grant's youngest son are the same age. Randy Park, 23, her oldest son, said his single mother lived a life of work to support the three of them. She didn't have time to think about what she wanted to do. Even when she saved up, it was for me and my brother to settle down with what we wanted to do, he said. Grant, who lived 30 miles away in Duluth, would often sleep through the night at the spa. She was rarely at home. working days and nights. It definitely shouldn't have been the case, he said. No one needs to work that much just to live. She worked tirelessly, but also found time to unwind with late nights, disco music, Korean dramas, horror films, and cooking for her two sons. Everyone says their mom's cooking is the best, but there isn't a better kimchi jjigae out there than my mom's, said Park, who would easily finish three big bowls of his mother's kimchi stew when it was around. She was like a teenager, Park said. She just never really had the time to do things for fun. Grant spent her very last days working. Kang recalled her moaning about another day of work before entering a room inside the salon to begin her shift. Kang's last words to her were to work hard. It would be the last time they would. Asked what he would tell his mum today, Park said, "You did a good job. You've done enough and finally get some sleep and rest." The day of the shooting, Kang and Lee's colleague Park wanted their home for the day and had asked Kang to call her husband, Grant Ho Lee. He previously told NBC Asian America. He arrived on the scene after receiving texts from Kang, who said the store was getting robbed. Grant Ho Lee remembered his wife's upbeat spirit. Park had worked several jobs at deli's, restaurants, a farm to help earn citizenship, and in jewellery business before Gold Spa. She would return home after long hours with sore, swollen wrists, but always checked in to see if he didn't skip his meal. My wife had told me how hard it was for her to make it in the US. Kang and Yoon-ji Lee said they replayed the last moments with their co-workers at the spa, and they are devastated for their families and community. I was just speaking with all my colleagues a few minutes ago before it all happened, Kang said. I am alive, but why are they dead? Nothing I say will bring my friends back to me, back to life. I lost my close friends, the children lost their mothers. I don't wish for this to happen ever again to anyone. And there's nothing to be said for how traumatizing a shooting or any traumatic event can be. It stays with you for a long time, even when you get to a point where you can manage those symptoms. And you get to and you can manage it. It still doesn't become easy. So for anyone out there who has PTSD or has been through something traumatic, please reach out to someone for help. I.e. your GP. And ask them to refer you. If you ever have someone like your GP ever say to you or give you numbers for you to ring, would you turn around and say to them, "No, can you refer me?" Right? Or if you have a support network, then utilise that support network with your friends and family. However, if you need someone to talk to, then do ring Samaritans on 116 123. That's Samaritans on 116 123. Also, if you are looking for support, then I do have a closed support group that I do run, and it's called Dysphoria Support. If you go to facebook.com/dysphoria support, my closed group will come up. If you feel that you need support and you want to be in a community of like-minded individuals, then by all means feel free to join our group, but do please reach out. But that will be it for today's episode. I want to thank everyone for listening. Again, this will go up on Monday. I'm currently recording this on the Sunday, because I want to get it ready for you guys on Monday. So have a fantastic day, enjoy the weather, or enjoy it however you want, and I will see you in the next episode on Monday.